The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. We are going to go a couple different directions today. Chris Cartman from Sun Devil Source on a story involving the build-out at ASU that I wanted to get into. Plus, we're less than 2 weeks away from Letter of Intent Day, and we like Chris. And tonight, ASU has a home game against Utah. Bill Walton is going to be there. I'm wondering if Chris is going to walk over to Bill and ask if he's doing a story on mushrooms like he did last week up at Oregon. I don't know. I don't know why this stuff even happens, but I like Chris. We'll have Chris with us. Goody at the movies today. It is Thursday. You need a life outside of sports. You know this, guys, especially with Super Bowl coming up. This is a weekend where you need, and I'm not meaning to sound sexist here. Ladies, if your husband does not like, or your boyfriend does not like the Super Bowl, and you know next week you need equity built up, you need to take him to a movie. All right? Both sides here I'm going at. So Bill will tell you what movie to go see. It's actually a documentary I want to talk to him about, plus Bob Costas not being involved with the Super Bowl this year. I sat through the Suns game last night, and I'm going to get to that in a minute because it's just dreadful to watch them try to go out and screw things up over and over and over. The Heisman odds for 2018 are out from Vegas. A lot around baseball, the Hall of Fame voting, and some other things that caught my eye. Our opening comments brought to you by What's On My Mind by Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor Now and their support. Protect what matters most. Log on. Get your free quote. You need that life insurance. Got to protect your family. Protect those loved ones. Protect what matters most. Get your free quote at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor Now and their support. We are self-funded, which means whenever you see someone like Sagicor or others on this show, they believe in what we're doing. Without them, we don't do it. So we appreciate them. It's been 6 years now. Our partners are AZ Central. We partner with the Arizona Republic. And, of course, Fox Sports Arizona, our television show that airs 16 times per week. Brad Sesmat, Football AZ. All right, with all that said, Eric, you want to go with Suns first? You want me to go over to U of A, Colorado tonight? What's in your wheelhouse today? You want me to talk more about Steve Wilkes?
No, where, I mean, where I'm honestly most excited about the XFL coming back, if I can be completely candid with you.
So what is the story on the XFL? I saw that up on a screen before the show started.
The XFL is going to be making a return in 2020, okay, led by Vince McMahon, the billionaire WWE owner.
Is our guy Michael Fabiano going to be involved in this?
I don't know, but he's been tweeting about it all morning. Has he? It's been pretty entertaining.
Yeah,
so.
Good.
And
good.
I was a fan of the XFL during the year and a quarter or quarter of a year or however long it lasted.
Right.
So I am curious to see how Vince McMahon, one of the smartest sports business people you'll ever run across, turns this product into something that people may watch, may not watch.
What time of year will he do it?
I don't know yet.
Where will he get his workforce from?
I don't know yet.
Will we see Rod Smart, he hate me, back?
I don't think so. He is probably, his football days are, he hate me is probably way past his prime when it comes to football.
I think they should put he hate me in the booth. And I'm Brad Sesmat with he. Hey, hate, what did you think? Hey, me, what do you got going on? Take us through the replay, hate. Have some fun with this.
I mean, people are clowning on this because it is the XFL, but I mean, it's sort of my generation, and it's one of those things that I think football fans might be looking for a break from the NFL if you're not a die-hard NFL fan, because like we talked about on yesterday's show, the playoffs have been compelling and entertaining.
Sure.
But most of the regular season was just the opposite.
I would say some of the playoff games were just as dull as dull. You know, when Tennessee is out there trying to play a game, I'm not interested. I don't care.
There's a difference between a great game and a close game.
Well, yes. But most of these teams, it seemed like the divide outside of Jacksonville, the divide was great. We knew where the Patriots were going, or at least
right.
We thought we did.
We did.
We thought, well, the way Jacksonville crapped the bed, in my opinion, they blew that game. I don't want to hear this nonsense from these Jaguar fans about how it's the officials' fault. Whenever people go into the it's the officials' fault, look in the mirror and quit blaming everybody else. It's your fault. You lost.
Yeah, they had a 10-point lead late in the second half.
They had
in,
I mean,
New England.
And they had situations where they blew it. Clock management was bad. You know, bitching about officials not making the right calls is not going to fix things. I'm interested tonight. The NBA All-Star Draft is tonight, and they're not going to show it, which I'm very disappointed in. Because what we want to see is LeBron and Steph Curry standing there side by side with little pictures. You know, get a graphic of the picture of Kevin Durant and then the picture next to him of Klay Thompson, fill in the blank. And then there's Kawhi Leonard and then there's Carmelo and all that stuff. And what we don't want is, yeah, I think a lot of this was just kind of organized by regionality so we can make sure that we get the most audience. I don't think this is as genuine as I wanted it to be. I usually don't care about All-Star games. Like, I am not watching the Pro Bowl this weekend. If you're watching the Pro Bowl this weekend, and I know people will send me a note on Monday saying, see, you were wrong about the Pro Bowl. Lots of people watch. It's garbage television. It just is. Don't care. They're not playing hard. They're trying to not get hurt. Go back to doing things like the Olympics, the superstars. Have wide receivers swim against wide receiver. Do something, anything other than trying to pretend to play football. It's not good. The NBA All-Star Game, on the other hand, yeah, it's a dunk fest. And yes, there's no defense. So this is interesting to me, where LeBron will say, I will take Porzingis. Even though Porzingis is the only player in this year's All-Star Game on the two rosters that is from a losing team, I still want Porzingis on my squad. For those of you that liked, and this leads me over to the Suns, for those of you that like to point out that Devin Booker got snubbed, A, you have to be on a winning team. B, Chris Paul's a better player than Devin Booker. Sorry, that's just how it is. Until you play on teams that win, you're not going to be invited unless you're playing in New York City. It's an advantage. There was no snub here of Devin Booker. Come on. It sounds so homerish. Oh my gosh, he was snubbed. No, he wasn't. He was on a bad team. The Suns last night were down 38. 38. You know the excuse I'm getting? Well, it was the last game of a four-game road trip. It wasn't a back-to-back. You're down 38. The other team shot 56% from the floor. You got to work hard. You got to work really hard to not play any defense. 56% from the floor. I felt bad for Tom Chambers. I like Tom. I think Tom Leander and Tom Chambers deserve hazard pay for the garbage they've had to talk about for the last, what is it, May 27th of 2010, since they had a playoff game. And poor Tom Chambers is sitting there last night saying, well, you know, the Suns' defense, they allowed the Pacers to shoot 56% from the floor. You're not going to win many games when you're shooting 56% from the floor. And I'm thinking, I would love to hear what those guys have to say when they are not on the air. Like, Eric, when you and I do our thing, we're not ones to throw around language much. Some language will fly in the bullpen or when we're talking about sports. But by and large, what you see here is what we're saying off the air, right? I mean, we want to hear the originality of it. Not the tone down, make sure that we don't offend anybody audience, when it's obvious that was an old-fashioned ass-kicking last night. That was it. So please don't tell me that, oh, they're this close or the referees have it in for them. The Suns shot 9 of 35 from three-point country last night. They allowed 56% from the floor. Does it sound like I'm taking the sledgehammer today rather than the fly swatter? Yes, it does. It continues to be unacceptable. They are going to go a decade. I'm sitting here right now, January 26th of 2018. They're going to go a decade and not make the playoffs.
And I think
I'm calling it.
I think the malaise around this team right now is probably at an all-time high, because they're just as to say they flatlined, I think, would be an understatement, because they've flatlined for the last 8 years, really.
I mean, Eric, 10 years. I'm calling it. They're going to go 10 years without making the playoffs. It's already bad enough that it's going to be 8. And the thing is, when Booker's contract pops up, when he's a free agent, he's gone.
That could completely blow up the timeline.
Well, in this timeline stuff, don't even get me going on that.
I just said that to agitate
you. I know you did. I mean, the whole idea of the time, there should never be a timeline. Eventually, we're going to be good. No, that's not how it works. Well, eventually we'll figure. No, What are we seeing? We're seeing the same cast of characters out on the floor as we saw a year ago, by and large, outside of Eric Bledsoe when they shut him down. Tyson Chandler is not going to be here in 2020. Why is he getting minutes? Alex Len continues to just be Alex Len. Josh Jackson is not special. Lonzo Ball would have been special. Everybody hate on Lonzo, just hates on the dad. He's going through his tough year. He's going to be better. Devin Booker's not going to be here. Anybody who tries to tell me, oh, yeah, he's going to sign extension, stay here, he knows he's not. He's losing money by staying here because he's not going to get asked to do things like be in the All-Star game, like have national endorsements, being on a team that can't find their way into the postseason. He just is. And the malaise that you refer to, or just the general, well, you know, the Suns won a couple games in a row. This could be it. They're finally turning the corner. This is a landmark game for the Suns tonight. They're playing the Rockets. Yeah, and James Harden's not playing, so stop. It says just stop. All right, on the other side, the college basketball scene tonight is going to be very interesting. We have Chris Cartman next to talk about some things at ASU in terms of building on campus, letter of intent day, less than 2 weeks away, and much more. That is next on Devil Sources, Chris Cartman. And then Good Eat the Movies at 10:45. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, one of the big stories in the Valley is that ASU is finally going to renovate dumpy Wells Fargo Arena. The place has been a dump. It's been a hole for several years now. And those who say, oh, it's just fine, you're not living in reality in the 21st century. And so Chris Cartman is nice enough to come on from Sun Devil Source because he has much more insight on this than I do, other than I'm just going to say it's about time and that this is a message to send to Bobby Hurley. We do want to keep you here. We understand we have to move the decimal point down several slots in all likelihood. Letter of Intent Day is coming up, and Chris always has opinions on many things around ASU. You can check out his content at sounddevilsource.com. I appreciate you coming on. What do you make out of Wells Fargo Arena and this Ice Den announcement?
Well, this has been in the works for a few years, Brad. It seems like just about every year I hear that we're a year away from getting an update on what the plans are going to be and what the timetable is for the construction and all of that. So it looks like this has really progressed finally. I wouldn't expect some complete teardown of Wells Fargo Arena. This is not going to be like Sun Devil Stadium where they, you know, have taken down the entire east side of the stadium and $300 million and all that. This is going to be more like a Pauley Pavilion type of remodel. I think the exterior of the structure will remain somewhat intact, but they will dress up a grand entrance probably with some glass and steel. Most of the changes will take place on the inside with the concourses, the restrooms, the team facilities, the concessions, and just make for a more aesthetically pleasing look and feel.
And who's paying for this?
So there, the release that went out on the Board of Regents, the proposal essentially states that it's all going to be public bond that's going to finance the debt for this that will then be paid back presumably through the revenue generated from the facilities district. That revenue is going to substantially increase here. A lot of the plans for the rest of the development are well on the path. And my understanding is they'll probably be generating somewhere around $20 to $30 million more annually when that is fully built out, which is probably another 6 to 8 years away.
So this would be, Chris, in the space of we can do concerts here. We're going to upgrade this to do events other than the sports and turn this into a facility over on the east side of the Valley, which doesn't have the, you know, the Glendale or the downtown arena or Dodge Theater, as it used to be known. Is that how this is being viewed? Or is this strictly going to be sports and graduations for high schools in your view?
No, I think that they'll basically reconfigure the entire lower level of it. They'll update the electrical and the plumbing and the mechanical systems in a way that allows for a lot more versatility with events. And I can't, you know, speak to how many concerts and other types of things they're going to ultimately have there. But I think that they want to make it so that it can accommodate all those types of things. And then this auxiliary gym that will be tethered to it and house hockey and gymnastics and wrestling and other sports, probably be able to have some women's basketball games and concurrent events when you have a men's basketball game. That's going to be really good because it's a lot more of an intimate type of a venue. Mm-hmm. And of course, for hockey, it's essential.
Chris Cartman with us, SunDevilSource.com, publisher, good friend of the show. I said off the top, this is a message to Bobby Hurley. Do you agree with this or disagree?
No, it definitely is. You know, they're my understanding from talking to sources around the program, they've already started the preliminary conversations about what it's going to take to extend him into the future from a financial standpoint, and also in terms of demonstrating that they're committed to upgrading their arena. They already have a very nice practice facility, and he's happy with that. It's probably going to take doubling his salary or more to be able to keep him. I think that that's something that ASU understands and is amenable to. And the arena project, if it comes off as anticipated, I think is another step in that direction. So he's very happy. He's like, when you talk to him, and it's not something he's just saying for public show, he actually is genuinely very happy at ASU and can foresee being here in the Valley for a long time.
He's very happy here, except during games. How's that?
Well, I mean, that was his case even when he was winning national championships, right? That's who he is.
But my understanding on him and his sideline decorum is that Ray did talk to him early on about toning it down some. Did you hear that as well?
Not really. I know that they have a good ongoing dialogue. Maybe that did come up. But I look at what I think it's interesting because Sean Miller was, you know, out setting the bell curve on this in the Pac-12 prior to Hurley's arrival in the Valley. And I actually think that you could always go over a limit. There's always a fine line that you have to be able to walk. But I actually think that it helps your program. It generates a lot of intensity probably in your players. It takes pressure off your players to know that you're fighting for them and you have their back so they can focus on the game. It tells officials that you're going to be really like an eagle eye on what their decisions are on the court and how they're officiating the game. It keeps them attentive. I understand that it could go over a line and lead to maybe people having some animosity there, but I actually don't really disagree with the tactic that he has.
And I don't either. I've just heard it. I've heard from fans who sit behind the bench at home games in particular, the first 10, 15 rows, they'd rather see more coaching rather than working officials. But I think that there is a balance to that. Is this a good team in your opinion? I know what happened at Kansas. I know what happened in December. We've seen what's happened here the last few weeks. Are they somewhere in the middle, Chris? Or from my view, it has been all along, you live by the three, you die by the three. They don't have established inside presence players yet. What do you make out of this team as they come into tonight's game against Utah?
Well, I don't totally agree with that. If you look at the advanced statistics, they've actually become much less reliant on the three-point shot this year. Last year, I totally would have said you're 100% right. This year, they are still leading the country in free throw attempts. It's come down in conference games. I think they've struggled to adjust to playing zones and different types of zone defenses. They've played in three games in a row. In the early Pac-12, they played a 2-3 zone, then they played a 1-3-1 zone, and then they played Oregon's matchup zone, which they fall back into from a three-quarter court press. Very, very different types of defenses, and I think that it disrupted their rhythm offensively, and then the athletic bodies that were longer and bigger in some of these Pac-12 teams have hurt their ability to be successful on the inside, which is what you're talking about there as well. So the second time around playing this week against Utah and Colorado. And then when they go to Oregon, I think they're going to be much more prepared for that. And I'm not saying they're going to win all those games.
Sure.
The Pac-12 has actually gotten tougher than people expected it would be this year. It's not as soft through the middle and in the lower half. But I would argue, Brad, that ASU's probably had the toughest seven-game schedule of any of the Pac-12 schools to start, because you start at Arizona, then you go to altitude in the mountain schools, you play Oregon, which is in the Final Four at home, and then you got to go on the road again and play Stanford. So that was a very difficult stretch. They're probably not going to do as well as I had anticipated in the Pac-12, but I still think that they'll end up 12-6 plus or minus one game. You know, 12-6 or 11-7 is my guess.
When they play U of A on the 15th of February, we always go to the biggest game in the history of, well, I think that this will be, because of DeAndre Ayton, likely the number one overall pick, and it is the U of A, and what happened earlier this season, it will be the biggest game in the Hurley era at home. Would you agree with that?
Have to say that's the case. There'll be a lot on the line there, because a win will sort of validate Hurley and ASU, two local people who are fringe ASU fans.
Correct.
Who a lot of those people are like, well, until they beat Arizona, you know, just leave me alone. You know, I'll start paying attention when they start beating Arizona. And then, of course, you have the seeding component, you know, preparing for postseason. ASU is going to need to try to get into a better rhythm as it goes into the end of February and then into March. Because I think, you know, it's, unless they fall apart, they're going to be not just a tournament team, but a reasonably well-seeded tournament team.
Yeah. And, of course, I was hoping after the Kansas win that they would keep rolling and they'd play GCU in the first round of the tournament at 2-15, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah, of course you
were. Of course I am. Of course I am. That's me. On the football end of things, so Letter of Intent Day is coming up in less than 2 weeks. What are you making out of this class that they are putting together? They had the 10 earlies, Hunter McGinnis they let go of on the offensive line. So they're trying to figure this out. Do you think this will be a good class for Herm, or is this just too quick to put together with his staff and everything?
Well, there's no way that in any transitional cycle, when you're firing a coach and replacing him, that you're going to sign a good class, you know, like relative to what would be a normal class at ASU. So it's going to be down. The key thing is having it not be really bad. And that's, you know, being very blunt about it. But
where are they at right now, Chris, where are they at right now from your view in that regard? Is it a really bad class? Is it an average? What is your view right now of this class?
It's below average, and but they can close on three or four kids that I think they're leading for, and that would have the ability, coupled with maybe getting another few projects that have upside, and make it a reasonable class. And this is the challenge of firing a staff, is you go through a 1 to 2 year period, mm-hmm. where you have to regenerate all this stuff in recruiting, and that has material impact on the field.
Yeah, I mean, you and I are going to sit here in September after they play Michigan State, and if they lose to Michigan State, which they won't be favored in, it's going to be overreaction like we haven't seen overreaction. I already sense that when I talk to people, that they are just the way that the diehard Sun Devil fan is looking at this that I talk to. Oh, they're going to roll right through it with Herm, and look at all the guys coming back, Brad. I'm like, I don't see it. I don't see where Michigan State comes in here. What is it, 18 returning starters last time I read, that they're going to be favored in that game. But it's like a litmus test very early in Herm's run, which is unfair, but it's set up that way. To me,
I just think I don't know because I don't agree with that. I just think that there's too much micro analysis in sports and everything else in society. Not to get off on, you know, some tangent, but
go for it. I love it when you get on a tangent. Go on a tangent, Chris. Yeah, come on.
I'm not going to be saying to myself anything at all, no matter what happens against Michigan State, about how that reflects on Herm Edwards' tenure at ASU. It's like, that's almost irrelevant to me. I'm one of these people who believes that at a place like ASU, you have to look at things in terms of 3, 4, 5 year increments, mm-hmm. to really be able to evaluate what's going on the ground. So yeah, it's true. There's a lot of national college football press, the people that are covering this stuff every single day, that like to poke fun at Herm Edwards and kind of mock, things that he says and whatever.
Every day, it feels like. Every day I'm seeing something.
Yeah, it's true. And I just think that while some of those points are valid, it's being so overanalyzed and blown up to a degree that's kind of unfair to Herm Edwards. And really, you're going to have to just wait and see what happens, in 2019, to be honest, because I think their offense is going to be pretty good next year. You have Manny Wilkins, N'Keal Harry. There's plenty of pieces that they shouldn't take a step back at all. Their defense is going to be challenged, I think, to, you're installing something that's totally new and you lose half your starters, some of your best players and all that. I'm not expecting ASU to knock the roof off the place next year, but I think they can be a bowl team, and then you're going to have to see what happens. The key thing is going to be, are they able to find a quarterback next to replace Manny Wilkins? That's really a huge essential key thing here.
No question. I think we both see that the same way. The quarterback room, when Brady White left and the uncertainty of the others that are there, that quarterback room went in a hurry to being very unsettled and very unstable, to the point where you can make the claim all you want to a five-star high school kid, but it's so unstable, in my view, you may have to go the JUCO route. And that's just me. Do you think anybody else is leaving outside of Brady White here in the next few weeks? Anybody else jumping the wall?
Probably not now. You're already into school and their winter conditioning program and all of that. The most likely scenario is after spring ball, you'll have another, maybe four or five players typically tend to leave then.
Right.
And they find out, hey, I'm not going to be part of these plans, or I'm third on the depth chart or whatever. I don't get along with the staff. That's kind of normal. What you don't want to have happen is you don't want to see a mass exodus of scholarships that then leads to some bigger problems down the line. Like if you had 8, 10, even 12 guys leave, that's hard to make up with the current scholarship rules.
All right. Good stuff there as always. And you can find Chris's content over at sundevilsource.com. Thanks, Chris.
My pleasure. Thanks, Brad.
It's always good to catch up with Chris Cartman, sundevilsource.com. Goody at the movies in about 10 minutes. So on the other side, there's some U of A stuff I want to get into. Their game tonight, Tad Boyle versus Sean Miller, DeAndre Ayton's National View, some stuff on the football end of U of A, and then I'm going to wrap in some baseball stuff as well with the Hall of Fame voting and maybe some Senior Bowl stuff too. So a lot to get to in the next segment, and then Goody, stay with us. So Goody at the Movies here in a couple of minutes. We'll get to Bill on this really cool documentary about the final days of Obama's administration. So I'm going to talk to him about that, and also Costas being left out of the Super Bowl on the air. So we'll talk with Bill here shortly. Tonight in Tucson, U of A plays Colorado. So Tad Boyle, the coach of Colorado, when they beat U of A earlier this month, was asked, was it sweet to beat a team that's under NCAA investigation and everything around Book Richardson? And I'm paraphrasing here. He said, yes, it is. So this is how Sean Miller usually works. When somebody takes a shot at him, he finds a way to take a shot back. So Colorado tonight at U of A, I am going to watch. Yes, I will watch. I don't know why Tad Boyle would take a shot like that. I really don't. Book Richardson got fired yesterday. Some really good journalism up on the Arizona Daily Star site today by Bruce Pasco. He asked for public records of how everything went down with Book Richardson, and I was sifting through it before showtime, didn't have all the details, so I'll just tell you, you should go read it. I'm interested on the court in DeAndre Ayton. So Ayton is now, in my view, clearly the number one pick. I've talked to a couple of NBA guys that believe that if you're choosing between Bagley and Ayton, that it is Ayton that you should choose. Ayton is the player with more upside, if that's possible. You look at DeAndre Ayton, he's 7 feet with a 5-foot wingspan. He only weighs 260. So you look at his frame. If you watch DeAndre Ayton, he can add frame. He can add to it. He's somebody that has a 40-inch vertical at 7 feet tall. It's just flat odd in a great way. He's averaging 19.5, 11 boards, 6.5 blocks. The 6.5 blocks, I'm watching their game against Stanford over the weekend, and he was making adjusted shots by Stanford on practically every play early in the game. Like, Stanford tried to go at Ayton, and it just didn't work. And so he's very hard to shoot over. You just cannot get a shot over DeAndre Ayton. Watch him tonight. It's more than just, wow, what a great dunk. No, it's the position that he put himself in to get the great dunk. And then there's the, you watch Raleigh Alkins and you watch Alonzo Trier. For those of you that are Arizona State fans, you haven't watched them enough. I get it. I watch them for beyond the college end of things. And in my view, I would take Alkins over Trier. That's just me if I'm building a team. I really like the defensive tenacity of Alkins. It seems to me somebody got into Trier and said, you know, this whole thing about showing what you can do offensively, it's fine, but you need to show you can play on both ends of the court. He seems to be playing harder. I could be wrong on that. But there's a lot I'm looking forward to with Arizona and Colorado tonight. The Arizona State-Utah game, I may flip over. I might even swing by. I'm going to be down there. I might just DVR and watch it at 2 in the morning. I don't know. But it's a good night of college basketball tonight. On the football front for U of A, so this is pretty deep and inside baseball, but in Kevin Sumlin's world. And by the way, Eric, have you seen the Kevin Sumlin billboards around town?
I have not. I've seen pictures of them, but I have not seen
the
actual
billboards. They are everywhere.
Billboards.
They are, and they're all around ASU, which I think is funny.
That shouldn't be too surprising.
There's one on the 101 at the 202, and then there's one at the 101 in McKellips going right by the university. And I hear there's one right by the stadium. And we reached out to the U of A about this, trying to do a story on it. And they said, oh, it's just our general marketing plan that we did with a billboard company. Yeah, right. Got it. I understand.
And ASU fans shouldn't be irritable about this. Because
why not?
Well, it's public. They could put billboards up right around their school if they wanted to.
Can you put Herm down and around U of A? Is there a reason to? Do you
Absolutely.
Recruit Tucson much?
You don't recruit it much. But it's still the second biggest city in Arizona, and it's still one of the better recruiting states.
I'd go put money in billboards in Texas and Los Angeles before I put money into Tucson. But that's just me. I'm not taking a shot at Tucson. I mean, how many players from Tucson are getting recruited this year? You have the kid at South Point, Melee.
There's probably going to be, five to eight Division One players down in Tucson.
All right. No, it's kind of interesting.
You're probably going to get a little bit better rates on the billboard in Tucson than you would in L.A.
Yes, you would. That's a good point. Tiger Woods is playing today. So I have to watch Golf Channel because Tiger on the course at Torrey Pines is something that is worth watching. He tees off at 11 a.m. So I will be watching that today. Down at the Senior Bowl, so Kalen Balazs spoke to some of our people down there, which is nice. We'll have some of that up on the site later. Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield are working out at the Senior Bowl. I don't know if Baker Mayfield's going to play. I merely bring this up because if you're a Cardinal fan, you want to see Baker Mayfield on the field in the Senior Bowl. He has yet to decide if he's going to play this weekend. I don't know why you'd go all the way to Mobile, Alabama and say, well, I'm not going to play. I just want to show up and get measured. The Heisman is out for 2018, the odds, and Khalil Tate is number 3. Bryce Love is the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy next year. I can say sitting here in January, there's not a chance that Bryce Love is going to win the Heisman Trophy because most people that vote in the SEC will never vote for a Pac-12 player. Most people that live on the East Coast will never stay up late at night to watch Stanford play football. And most people can't watch them play football because they're on the Pac-12 network, which nobody has access to. And that's just me. But Khalil Tate is number 3 in this. Eric, have you seen Jonathan Taylor, the running back at Wisconsin? He is number 2.
Seen him a little
bit. To win the Heisman next year.
Big Ten football and the Wisconsin Badgers usually don't make the cut on Saturdays when it comes to games to watch, but I did catch a little bit of him this year.
So Bryce Love, are you in on that? The favorite to win the Heisman, according to Bovada in Vegas.
I believe it.
You believe it?
Sure.
Khalil Tate, number 3. And, you know, I'm looking at this from a voting perspective. I love Bryce Love last year. I don't know if he has enough big games. I'll have Notre Dame late in the season. And I don't think Khalil Tate really has a strong schedule from start to finish. So that's just me. All right, Good Eat the Movies is next. And I'll save the baseball stuff I'll write about it. Clemens got 57% of the vote. Bonds got 56%. But I'll just write about it. You can see it on the site. We want to get to Bill. Good Eat the Movies on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. And now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports, and it's time to work for the weekend, as Loverboy would say, dating Bill and I. Were you a Loverboy guy back in the day?
No, oh, not at all.
No? Boy band?
No.
Bad hair? Jumpsuits? None of that, huh?
No. I was more of the alternative, what they used to call college rock kind of guy.
In excess? Depeche Mode?
I didn't like them that much, but I lived in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and I knew a little bit this guy named Mitch Easter, who produced the first couple of REM records.
Okay.
And had his own band, Let's Active, and he had this studio called the Draven Studio, and college rock bands from everywhere came to Winston-Salem to record, and then they'd go out and play, and you could see them for, you know, like $5 or something. It was great. If you like that kind of music, man, that was the place and the time to be.
Okay, I'll flip it over on you. Growing up in San Diego, I worked at all sports on one side and oldies on the other side of the hall with Wolfman Jack. I worked with Wolfman. And then we had an alternative station, 91X. And we would have bands like NXS drop stuff off at the front desk saying, can you please play this for us? And, you know, Tony Hawk had a little skateboard company T-shirt thing going, and you know, you didn't know who Tony Hawk was. They lived in Carlsbad and skated in his pool, and he dropped stuff off at our front door. It was fun. It was crazy.
Yeah, I bet it was.
So no Loverboy. All right, no Bob Costas on the Super Bowl. Let's put your TV hat on before
the Olympics, by the way.
Or the Olympics. Yeah. So do you think, as he suggested to Sports Business Journal, that his attack of the NFL, it's killing kids and their brains, is the reason why he is no longer doing these marquee events? Did the NFL get to NBC?
No, I don't think so. I think that Costas is one of the few people that is sort of beyond that reach. And not because they, believe me, not because they think he's so great or anything, but because he means money. I mean, he's somebody that you might actually tune in for and tune in to watch. And there's not many. I can't think of hardly anybody else like that anymore. I mean, back in the day, with Howard Cosell, you might hate him and tune in, and you might love him to tune in. But I think Costas makes his own decisions. It's a juicy story, and it would be. I mean, the NFL has done stuff before. There was a TV show on ESPN, a fictional show, yeah, and that was a pretty good show. And they killed that. I mean, they just out and out killed that. Even though it had pretty decent ratings and pretty decent reviews. But I think Costas, if he wanted to do it, and I'm surprised a little bit that he's not. I mean, I know he's like a baseball, you know, he's a seam hit or whatever, but I would like to see him take kind of a victory lap or something. Remember like when Dickenberg came back and did like, you know, he'd come back and he'd do, you know, once every couple, 2-3 days, he'd do a little, you know, essay or something.
Right.
I wish Costas would do that because it just makes you feel old. I mean, you know, but in my professional life, certainly there's never been an Olympics without a. I write about the Olympics usually a little bit about the broadcast and stuff.
Sure.
And it's going to be weird not to have him to talk. I mean, I guess I can talk about him at first, but you don't really want to talk too much about something that's not there.
Here's the thing, though, Bill. You know, here's the thing on Costas, from my view. And I've had him on the show, I've talked to him lots and lots of times, as I'm sure you have. And he's going to walk up to the line. And there's going to be lines that he is going to cross. And so for him, it would be the North Korean bobsled team is training with the South Korean bobsled team. Or in reality, I've heard the North Korean and South Korean figure skaters are training together. Okay, that's really interesting to me in the geopolitical world that we're in with the Olympics coming up next month. I want that story. I get it. That's what Costas would do. I don't think that Mike Tirico or Liam McHugh or whoever they have is going to go down that path unless it's a producer saying, no, this is what we're doing today. I get a feel Costas walks in the room and says, no, guys, we're doing a deep dive on this. Okay, we're not going to ignore this.
Costas is intellectually curious. I mean, I think he used to have a kind of a late night show.
Yep.
And it didn't last very long. It didn't go anywhere. But it was not a sports show. And it was, I think, he kind of modeled himself after Dick Cavett, if you want to feel really old. But Costas is it was a good venue for him because he, you know, he did things that other people didn't, and it sort of showed what he could do. He has done, by the way, two of my favorite things ever on TV. One was he and Pat Riley, when Pat Riley was in the studio for their NBA show on NBC, they conducted a year-long half a season-long free throw shooting contest in the studio. Mm-hmm. And on Christmas Day, they had a game. Costas was at his home in St. Louis shooting a free throw. He was going to have to do it outside. You know, that was going to be the tiebreaker. Dan Dierdorf was his neighbor, and he was rebounding for him. and the way that the shot was like they're up there with Costas, and the way the shot was is Dierdorf, who is enormous. He's just a giant guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But he looked tiny down there. I mean, he was just like this little guy down there at the basket. And Costas shot it and made it, and Dierdorf just leapt in the air. Like threw his arms up. He's like a little kid. It was great. But then the other time was he was on. They were going to talk about Dennis Rodman, and he was wearing this weird hat. And Costas was introducing the interview. And then at the end of the interview, and he said, and Rodman wearing a chapeau, the likes of which have not been seen since the days of Rocket J. Squirrel.
Yeah, Rocket J. That's good. This is one last story on this front. So I have Costas on. He's pushing a book. And in my interview style is I let the subject go, unless I try to direct them a certain way. But by and large, I think you've figured me out by now. It's I'm going to let you go unless it's like you're so far off the rails, which, Bill, you never are, to bring you back in a little bit. The day after, I did like 20 minutes with him. This was back on the KTAR days. And I get a phone call from him the next day. He said, hey, I'm calling to apologize. I talked way too much last night. I did not give you an opportunity. And I said, Bob, my style is to let someone go. So the next time I see him, he's doing a Suns game. I walk over to him and say, hey, thanks very much. And he said, you know, I would like your opinion on this tie today. Which tie do you think I should wear? And he opens his briefcase and he has three ties. And we just kind of chuckled about how dumb and goofy the business is, because the ties is what people watch more than the content, unfortunately. But, you know, I found him to be pretty self-effacing. Some people have not felt that way about him, and this deal with the NFL is really the guy. I've read the Cosell books, which are not flattering towards Costas. But I will miss him on Super Bowl. There's not a chance I'm going to sit there at 11 a.m. until kickoff and watch all the minutia that they're going to throw on the air. There's not a chance.
Yes, there's zero chance.
Yeah. So, okay, the final year. This movie, it's a doc on Obama administration final year, but it's more on the foreign policy of Obama, correct? Tell me about this.
Yeah. They focus on the Susan Powery, the UN ambassador, and Ben Rhodes, who is the assistant. His title was assistant security or national security advisor, but he actually was kind of a jack of all trades, and he handled the press a lot and stuff. And then Susan Rice, and John Kerry, but Obama's in there a lot too. The access is incredible. You know, they're just wandering there, and it really shows you. The interesting thing, no matter what your political bent is just to see sort of how the office works. Like Rhodes says, you know, it's really the West Wing, you're surprised at how tiny it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is where everything happens. There is no backstop. There's no safe after this. You know, this is where decisions get made. And what strikes you is how competent these people are, and how, and certainly in terms of the last year, you can like Donald Trump, you cannot like Donald Trump, but you have to admit that the office seems to run like a dumpster fire. And this is just that, you know, they're making decisions that you may not agree with, or they're working out the Iran deal and stuff, but you just, it seems like a lifetime ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was a year ago, and it seems like 20 years ago. And I mean, it's on that front alone, I think it's worth watching. The conservatives will hate it, but it's not one of those like Dinesh D'Souza screeds that he puts out every couple of years. It doesn't really trash anybody. It doesn't really trash Trump. It just makes everybody in the Obama administration look good. They sort of take that tack.
So this is going to come out on HBO in May, but it's worth seeing now, and it's only showing at Valley Art from what I've seen. And you answered part of my question. Is this something that, is there anybody who can just go and watch a piece of art like this, piece of work like this, And just understand that it's not about Obama and it's not about Trump. Or is it we're just so freaking divided that people can't come in without a lens one way or the other. Thus, a lot of people won't even touch this film.
There is no possible way that you can watch it without that. We are too divided. And it is, by the way, I mean, it's very pro-Obama. And it goes through the election and the people, I mean, it's worth seeing just to see these people's reaction on election night. Ben Rhodes is this kind of cocky, smart-alecky guy. And I don't think I've ever seen this. They just let the camera roll. And he's outside sitting in the cold, you know, on election night. And he's just like, I can't.
He can't put it together.
And then he can't say anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is a very loquacious guy. And finally he just says, I don't know what the words are. I liked it.
We have about a minute. In a minute, what is your overview of Oscar nominations and what happened and who was snubbed? Can you give me just a minute? We'll go deeper into this as we get closer to the event.
Yes, I think that it's a huge step forward in diversity, and I think that having said that, at the same time, it is not a handout. It is not a token kind of thing. It's what it is, I mean, if you've seen the movie Get Out, you know it belongs there, and you know Jordan Peele belongs in the Best Director slot. If you've seen Lady Bird, you know that movie belongs there. You know Greta Gerwig belongs there. This is not some knee-jerk liberal, you know, glad-handing. These are great movies. And I think that in terms of snubs, I really wish The Big Sick had made it into Best Picture. I love that movie. The Florida Project was really good, too. But if I can pimp myself here for a moment.
Sure.
Today at 2, we'll be doing an AZ Central Insiders Facebook Live event.
All right.
Where I'll be talking about the Oscars.
Are you going to do it out in public or in a studio?
Heavens knows. Ensconced in a studio where no one can yell at me.
You need to be out. You need to be out so I can go sit in the back and yell at you and throw stuff.
I mean, I will suggest that for next time. I think it's too late for this time.
All right.
Yeah.
2 o'clock today on AZ Central, right?
Yes, and Facebook Live. There should be a link there.
All right. See you later. Thanks.
Bye.
This is Bill Goodykins. Goody at the Movies. A good phone, good content, and Bill got something in less than a minute. That's a good segment. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat.